With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Today, I want to welcome everybody to the Unimpressed Podcast today. And I want to welcome our guest, Gianni Russo, from New York City, and I'm unimpressed. I haven't met this gentleman until now, and I want to welcome to the show.
Well, thank you,
Mr. Russo. How are you doing today?
You got a Yankee hat on, though. You must be something to do with New York.
Well, I kind of got a funny story. My dad was born in Newark.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And my mom was from North Carolina. And our family, the Ruffalos, Jenny and Tasio Sopranos, moved. Art Ruffalo moved the family out of Newark in 51, and they all settled in the bottom of the hill in North Caldwell. That's how North Caldwell started.
So do you have a little crime history in your life also?
it's very, very interesting because my grandmother used to never really told any stories till she got in her 70s, 80s. We were like, grandmother, you know, who was that guy's lap you sat on, the mobster's lap you sat on when you were 14 years old? And she said Al Capone. And Al Capone used to come to the house and bring Joe Louis, because the Italian, the Remicchio family, it was like 14 kids. And Alex Remicchio ran the railroad, and he raised all the kids. And he was buddies with Capone, I guess, because he ran the railroads.
But before he moved to Chicago, Capone?
I couldn't tell you the date.
Because he was in Brooklyn for a while. Then he went out to Chicago during Prohibition.
Yeah, maybe it's when he was in the New York City area. It's very possible. But Alex, I guess because he controlled the railroad system, I don't know what they were doing, but they were good friends.
They were using it for Prohibition. That's what they were using it for. I'll let you know that much.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I got another little story, too, where I moved to Charleston, South Carolina. I was in North Caldwell, New Jersey for the past 12 and a half years, and we moved during the pandemic. And obviously, we still come up to New York all the time. But you heard of the movie The Green Book?
Of course. Are you kidding me? Nick Vallelongo? Tony Lip worked for us.
Really?
He worked at the Copa. That's how the book started, when he stole the hat. Are you kidding me? That was Costello's place. Number 4,
oh, really?
60th Street. I live one block away. The Copa.
Well, did you know last name LaPerry? LaPerry from the Sicilian side?
I know the whole thing, believe me.
Well, Uncle Eddie was a LaPerry. My uncle, he married my grandmother's sister, and he was the Sicilian side of the family, and I think Uncle Eddie was his brother.
Well, because that makes a lot of sense, because Costello was from Sicily. My great uncle sent his mother and father here, as he did Carlo Gambino to New York, Angelo Russo. Then they hung him in 48 when they were cleaning up La Cosa Nostra in Sicily.
Well, I mean, that's a very interesting psychology behind that. I mean, you look at a guy like you who looks like you were a creative guy and, you know, trying to make that decision, all right, I need to survive, right? But I'm an artist. How do you weigh that decision when these family members and friends are around you that are in this type of business?
Well, I've never been around people that weren't in our business. I was from Mulberry Street, which is, you know, Carlo Gambino, O'Neill Delacroix, everybody in the world was down there. And I always thought they were really my uncles because I was a young kid. And if you read my book, when I was 6 and a half, I was put in Bellevue for five years under quarantine on 30th and East End. And then I got out when I was 12. I was selling ballpoint pens up here in this neighborhood. And I was still a gimp. My left side of my body was still crippled. And that's how I met Costello. Had nothing to do with family at all.
Yeah. You think society dramatizes the lifestyle more than they should? They kind of over-exaggerate it Because when you know these guys, they're just like your friends, you know. They're just
they're normal people. Deal. Oh yeah, I think the motion picture business has really. I mean, I remember the transition of people like John Gotti and all these people. Once they saw The Godfather, they took on a whole new persona. They were wearing sweatsuits and all of that. Now they're all dressed up. I mean, it's like it was so funny. Everybody wanted to be Sonny Corleone.
Who's the guy that played in Goodfellas? What was this guy's name? The story, who was Goodfellas about? What was the story about?
Well, I never was involved with Goodfellas, and I didn't even, you know, I know all about it. But to me, that was in the Bronx, and I was never from the Bronx. I was always from downtown.
I had, what's his name? Henry Hill. I had Henry Hill. We developed a project, and I knew his girlfriend, Lisa Caserta. We developed a project with Henry Hill after Goodfellas. We had his life rights after Goodfellas when he went into witness protection.
Right.
And this is a story I heard that, you know, when the feds had Henry Hill, they wanted him just for the Lufthansa heist, right?
Oh, but yeah. Well, you know, why don't you? Because of, well, I don't know how much you know about the Lufthansa heist. I was dating Kathy Burke at the time. That's, you know, her father was the kingpin of that whole thing. Huh. And good Burke. Thing Henry Hill got out of there because nobody got paid. When they wanted to get paid, they got killed off. Do you know that money is still missing? Yeah.
But the story I heard, I don't know if there's any truth to it, is like when Henry Hill started running his mouth about the Lufthansa heist, he started indicting all these Italian capos, right? And at the time, I was told that Gotti was just a henchman
right.
for the mafia.
And he wanted to make a score.
Because of Henry Hill running his mouth, took out all these leaders in the Italian mafia. That's why Gotti rose to power so quickly. Is there any truth? You think there was any truth to that?
I know there was.
Really?
No, I mean, that's how he wanted to make his bones. He figured if he could do that, he'll move up fast. Up until that time, he was a hijacker. And what really pissed him off, John, is that was his route. JFK, Jimmy Burke was his idol up until that time. Uh-huh. But the fact that he took down, you know, the Lufthansa heist was the biggest heist in the world. I still, until today, I think it is yet.
So what's going through your head as you meet a guy like Costello and, you know?
Well, I didn't even know who he was. I was 12 and a half years of age. And every time I saw the guy, he'd give me a few dollars, never take a pen, give me words of wisdom. And that went on for, you know, months. And then one day he asked me my name and I told him. And he asked, who's Angelo Russo to me? I said, well, Angelo Russo is my great uncle on my father's side, my grandfather's side. Because my grandfather was from Palermo, Sicily. My grandmother was from Naples. So I had two great mob connections, the Camorra and the Mafia. So it was like, you know, it was like bookends. And I'm stuck in the middle as a crippled kid. It was perfect. Worked out great. Here I am, still talking about it.
And, you know, you had a few trials and tribulations. I mean, the feds came after you, which you got out of.
Yeah, I had 23 federal indictments and 3 murder ones that I never even sat in a jail or had handcuffs on. I learned the law through Costello and the older guys, and even Accardo in Sicily, Chicago as I grew older. Now, when you see a high-profile guy has to turn himself in, his lawyer tells him he has got to show up on Monday to turn himself in. Because once you have an attorney representing you, they can't talk to you. That's why even on these mystery shows or NYPD Blue, all of them, as soon as they say, I want to talk to my lawyer, they stop talking to you. But if you had the lawyer in place, they have to go to the lawyer. So I had the best lawyers all the time because they'd get in touch with them. They'd call me and I'd leave the country and I left again.
Interesting. What was going through your head? Was it?
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Were you drawn more to the art? What was your makeup? What was your...
Well, you keep mentioning the art of making motion pictures, you mean?
Yeah, because I think you have to have that internal drive.
I just love celebrity because of the fact that, you know, Costello owning the Copa, when I was like my seventh birthday, Dolores Barone gave me a transistor radio, and I was getting pretty depressed. I was already there 4 or 5 months, and nobody was coming. I didn't know what quarantine meant. No parents, nobody came. And she gave me a transistor radio. And on the night before my birthday, December 11th, December 12th, I turned it on at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I'm hearing about this guy, Frank Sinatra, who lives in Hoboken, humble beginnings. And his mother was a barmaid. His father was a fireman. And he made this. He was doing 6 shows at that time at the Paramount every day, packing it. So he inspired me and had nothing to do with the arts at that time. It was just, number one, I wanted to get out of the hospital. And I needed some motivation. And here's a guy that came from nowhere. And look where he was. And then spinning forward 3 years later, I meet him at the Copa. I'm bringing, you know, I dropped a lot of money there every day for them. And I walk in, and there was Sinatra warming up for his night show. And I couldn't believe it. And he looked at me, and then he looked at Julie Bodell, who was the operating manager at the time, and the front for Costello. And he said, Sinatra said, like to say, who's this guy? He said, oh, no, that's Costello's kid. And with that, he went on singing. So I sat down, listened to him for a while. And then they took a break. He put a cigarette in his mouth. And I went over and I lit it. And I told him, I said, how he saved my life. And he became my mentor, you know, a few years ago when I was in Bellevue. And he wanted to hear the story. And I told him the story. And he said, well, how'd you get the radio? I said, well, Mr. Gambino gave me the radio. He sent it up through a nurse. He said, like, Carlo Gambino? I said, yeah. He said, what's your name? I said, the kid. He said, no, what's your real name? I said, I was told only to say the kid. He said, well, who told you that? I said, Frank Costello. He said, wait a minute. Gambino gave you a radio. Costello named you the kid. And I know he owns this place. He said, maybe I get to know you. You don't get to know me.
Was Sinatra, did he have an amazing voice when you heard him? I mean,
oh my God, yeah. He was my only singing teacher. Marlon Brando was my only acting teacher. Sinatra was my only singing teacher. And I just turned my book, The Hollywood Godfather, into a musical, and I'm touring the world with it. I just came out of Sicily singing, and his only voice is Sinatra. It's amazing.
Well, I mean, I know you say that when I say arts, I'm saying you got to have some type of internal talent to pull off what you do.
Well, I didn't, but I went, you know, I did. I mean, I had the anxiety, but and unbeknownst to me, I went to the right people. How do you get Marlon Brando to be your only acting teacher? I got that happened because I was on The Godfather and he wanted to make sure I did it right. And the same thing with Sinatra later on. I was already his friend. And I always wanted to become a singer. So that's how I backed into the arts. That's what I'm saying here. I didn't know at the age of 12 or 13, at 12, you know, that pedophile attacked me in the hospital. And I guess that's inbred in me. I had no problem taking him out. Mm-hmm. And so with that, I didn't know where I wanted to go. Because I was getting accolades just in the neighborhood, the fact that I killed a pedophile at 12. And they thought, you know, the apple didn't fall far from the tree, my uncles and them in Sicily. Mm-hmm. So I was in a combination, and I'm glad I picked the one I wanted, that I didn't go to jail. And I'm still making motion pictures and still writing books, fortunately.
Well, when I say arts, would you not classify yourself as a highly, you know, a guy that's an actor, a guy that's a singer, like highly sensitive, like your senses are very heightened and you can take those senses one way or the other. You can take those senses to entertain somebody, or you could take those senses to maybe hurt somebody if you needed to. But did you ever feel that?
No, I think I'm using them all. I just hurt somebody the other night in the park. These idiots try to take my jewelry off. I mean, it's crazy. I walk around with a stick that I had made. First, there were canes. And then everybody said, well, something must be wrong with Johnny Russo. He's walking around with a cane. I had these canes made with a 3-pound brass skull on it out of hickory. Yeah. Because I have a carry permit, believe it or not, in New York, to get a concealed permit in New York is impossible. But being that I'm an actor, they gave it to me. But my lawyers told me, you can't use it. Don't use it right now because you'll go to jail. So I started carrying a stick, this cane. And so far, I'm 4 for 4. 2 knees, a jaw, and a wrist.
Well, do you think after coming out of this pandemic is heightened the city? I was just up there a couple of weeks ago, and it seems like it's a little bit of an edge to it. I mean, I was fine, but there's a little more of an edge to it than there was 3 years ago.
Oh, my God, yeah. Well, I lived through the 60s. It was an edge. I lived through the 80s. There was an edge. And now I really think there's an edge now, but, you know, it's not organized. It's just people responding to being homeless and whatever. And they're all, you know, unfortunately, a lot of them are mentally deranged and they're under a lot of pressure to survive. So they say things that you don't, I'm not going to stand around and try to define it. I give them a warning. If they don't take the warning, lights out. See you later.
Well, they say that there's 20% of society that this pandemic shined a light on. And their mental health, because a lot of people were able to cover it up.
Right.
And now that this has shined a light on it, it's kind of brought more craziness to the surface, if you will. How does a city like New York deal with that?
I don't know if they can. They're trying. I mean, you know, this new mayor, he's starting a whole mental program. But I just watched something today. You know, they're taking people off the trains, bring them to the emergency rooms that are already full. And then what do? Release them? That doesn't help them. They're going to have to turn some of these vacant hotels into mass mental institutions again. I don't know how they're going to do it. There's a lot of damaged people out there.
Now, do you ever go back to Las Vegas at all?
I was just in Vegas, just to the show in Vegas. I was honored, believe it or not, by the Latin Chamber of Commerce because I didn't realize myself. Early on in my 20s and 30s, I opened so many businesses. Johnny Russo Wig Worlds, Russo Castaldi Jewelers, State Street Restaurant. Even Tiffany's, when I opened Tiffany's, I had Elvis open that up in the Tropicana Hotel. So they honored me for putting so many people to work. But again, it was subconsciously I did it. I just needed all these people. So I went back and I did a show there besides, which was really great to go back. But that's another city that turned around, man. That's scary. You know, I had the privilege of I went to Vegas in 1959 and stayed 30 years. So I was there. I took Pablo Escobar's guy out in my club in State Street, and that's when I left. I figured I'm getting out of here now, too.
Did you know a guy out there named Dan Chandler?
Dan Chandler? Of course.
Dan Chandler. He ran Caesars.
I know him well. Are you kidding?
Really?
Major guy.
I was partner with his granddaughter, with Aaron Chandler. We had Nick Cassavetes write a script about her story.
Oh, wow, yeah. Well, I can imagine.
You know, about these Southern guys from Kentucky. You know, it was Ben Chandler who owned the paper and then Dan Chandler who was hired and fired from Caesar several times. And he also hung out with that crew that hired Woody Harrelson's dad, first time to put a hit on a federal judge.
So no, I know. I mean, I had the privilege, again, because, you know, that when you're around people that they know you're respected and honored to say what I'm, you know, honored in that life, you become across all of them. Wingy Grove, I knew every guy he knew, Dan.
Really?
Billy
Wow.
Weinberg, all those. Swifty, did you ever meet Swifty with him?
I did not.
Oh.
I did not. It's a small world, though, I guess, huh?
Oh, my God, yeah. When you get to that level, you know, these guys are dealing millions of dollars.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, and I was a part of that for a long time through the Vatican Bank. I moved a lot of money for the owners of casinos to get rid of their surplus.
What is that scenario with the Vatican Bank like?
Well, that's, I was respected because of a guy called Nick Nitti, and Nick Nitti's obviously from the Frank Nitti family out of Chicago. And most people don't realize this history, that Bishop Marcinkus, who was the head fiduciary for the Vatican Bank, came from Chicago. And the only branch of the Vatican Bank is in Chicago. Nobody, I can't believe that, you know, the FBI don't follow the, you know, the trace of the money. So we moved. They're trying to say, yet I don't attest to it. They said that we moved $600 million out in 15 years. Could be, but you know, you're not going to go to the Vatican Bank and find that out. I'll tell you that.
Well, in the Vatican, they're the biggest landowner in the world.
in the world, largest stockholder in the world. And if you go beyond the Vatican Bank, there's the Solidarity, the oldest society in the world. You are not subpoenaing these people.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to the Vatican to say, we want to look at your books.
Yeah. Yeah, they got their own city.
Hello.
What was it like? What was it like meeting Elvis?
Oh, I loved Elvis. I met Elvis in a very strange way. I remember. I mean, my recollect is amazing for a guy my age. But I met Elvis in Florida. Frank Sinatra called me. I already became friends with him for 2 or 3 years, and he said, "Come down here. I'm doing a special for NBC welcoming Elvis home." Now, I knew about Elvis, but I never got to know him. And he did the NBC special. In fact, it's in my show. I bought the clips. The show I just turned into a musical. I have the clips, and it's Elvis and me and Sinatra. And then when he opened the hotel for a friend of mine called Kurt Kerkorian, the International Hotel, the second week of July, I opened my club that same weekend and had him come hang out there Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, and had all the people on the PBX operators saying, "You won't believe it was at Tiffany's, Elvis." That was all I needed.
What's the tone to you then compared to now when you talk about celebrity or you talk about Hollywood? Was there a more celebrated tone in that time than you think now?
Well, you know, at that time, it was a privilege to even know these people. And it was long before the media took over. You know, there's shows every night you could watch and know about celebrities. Years ago, there was a mystique about it. And I think that was the intrigue. You know, like everybody thought all the pit bosses were mobsters. Well, how could they be? I mean, most of the owners were, but not the pit bosses. You know, they built all that. And that's why I think women always came after me also. They like that gray area. I've watched a lot of it, you know, and I'm still basking in it at 80. And it's been a great run. I can't deny that. And very lucrative.
Well, looking back on it now, does it feel like you feel like you're 80?
No. I got to remind myself every once in a while. Unfortunately, my body is not telling me that either. Like after I do this tonight, I'll go do 3 or 4 miles. Now that it's cold, I go to Bloomingdale's, a block away from my house. It's 9 stories high. I do 3 floors. I do it 3 times each floor. It's 3.5 miles. I come home, and it's in temperature control. Nice. No, I'm in great shape. Well, let me ask you a question. Do I look like I'm 80?
No, you look great. I mean, and you're very, very sharp. I couldn't tell. Like, if I didn't see you, I couldn't tell or whatever, you know.
No, I've been blessed, fortunately. Really blessed. And then they're predicting I'm going to live to 120.
Really?
Well, I take stem cells. I'm on an experiment. I got shot 13 years ago, close range. They brought me up to New York Presbyterian. And when they went in to remove the bullets, they used the robotic operating table. And then they realized the left side of my body was smaller than the right side. And they asked me if I'd volunteer. Again, luck. Here's somebody else gets shot. Normally they'll die. They brought me into this experiment. And they're using my stem cells from my right side of my body to rebuild my left side. And it's working. My hair is growing. I get a haircut every 2 weeks. I mean, it's craziness.
How many of those shots you got to get a week or whatever?
No, I can go every 90 days now. At first it was like being embalmed because you get on a table and they drain all the blood out of your filter and put it back in you. They sedate you. So, I mean, but I have energy my kids don't have. I mean, I got 9 sons and 2 daughters and 10 grandsons. And they say, "How do you keep going?" I don't know. I mean, I just have fun, man.
And all your family now, are they in the New York City area?
Oh, no, they're all over the world. No, I blame it on my boat. I bought a boat when I was 21, and everybody wanted to know where I escaped to. I go to Madeira, Spain, and get on this boat, and I've been oblivious to people for up to 36 months. They didn't even know where I was.
Stayed on the water.
Stay on the water. Not really. I'm on the boat, but you can't. The boat's not chartered in my name. The ownership's not in my name. The captain's is 4 generations already. I bought it when I was 21 for $3 million cash. So there was no trace of the ownership. And it's an Italian boat, a Riva. It's 148 feet, 28 foot beam. So I can go anywhere on it. And I have.
Nice. Now, where's the boat at now?
Back in Madeira, Spain.
What would you say, why's somebody trying to shoot at you 13 years ago?
It wasn't a guy, it was a girl. Do you believe it? It was a girl. It was a girl who her father's a very high-profile senator, and she had a job in the Literary Congress, and I registered my book, and I had to wait for certain people to die, and she read the book, and she thought I had something to do with RFK's assassination. I mean, I was a messenger during that time, but nothing else. I didn't know who they were going to kill. I actually thought they were going to kill Robert because he was young. The mistake John made was to make his brother attorney general, and he went after everybody that made him president. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a strange story.
That goes to your Marilyn Monroe. How did you hook up with Marilyn Monroe?
Again, and by mistake, because I got caught by a Troon officer, and part of my route was going past Lindy's and winding up at Toots Shores, just delivering envelopes. I knew what was in them. It was the numbers and the wire money that these guys were betting all day. I dropped them off at barbershops, and Costello's idea. It was great for me because here was this little gimp kid. Nobody's going to stop me on the street. And a Troon officer stopped me in front of Lindy's. And he said, "Why aren't you in school?" And I laughed at the guy. I was already doing this for 2 years. I said, "School? Are you kidding me?" But I knew he wasn't a cop because he had a brown uniform on. Unless he was a dog catcher, and I didn't care about that either. Mm-hmm. And he says, you have to go to school. How old are you? I said, "I'm 15. He says, "You got to go to school till you're 16. So he writes me a ticket. So I take the ticket, and I didn't care. I had like $5,000 in my pocket. What's this guy going to do to me? So I walk into Toots Shores, and Costello sees me with the ticket, and I didn't get it at first. And Jackie Gleason was there, Joe DiMaggio, everybody was in there. That was the watering hole at the end of the day, or the beginning of the day most of the times. And he said, "How'd you get that ticket? Walking too fast?" And I didn't get it. And he took it, and he said, "This is a Troon officer's ticket." He said, "How old are you?" I said, "I'm 15. He said, "How long are you working for me?" I said, "About 2.5 years, 3 years." He said, "Well, you got to go to school." I said, "I don't want to go to school." He said, "I'll take care of it." So he took care of it. The next day I go see him. He says, "You got to stop at Wilford Academy. It's on top of Lindy's. Just go up. Just sign in until you're 16 and don't worry about it." Well, I got there that morning. I'm already dressed to do my errands for him. I didn't need to meet him until 11. This was 9 o'clock. I look over the shoulder of this lady telling me I don't have to be here. There's 20 or 30 young girls there. Where are you going to find 20 or 30 young girls in New York City at 9 o'clock in the morning? I was there every morning at 9 o'clock. But then they came in for Shampoo Boys. Mark Sinclair and Kenneth came in. I didn't know what that even was. And the teacher explained to me, if you go become a Shampoo Boy for these guys, it's like credits for school. And they were working at Lily Dache, a haberdasher on 56th Street. I used to pass that place all the time. All limousines, society women. So I was hoping they'd pick me. I didn't know they were two Fun Oaks. So that was a good-looking kid at the time. They picked me right away. The fourth head of hair, I was washing Marilyn Monroe's head. I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
And at night when Costello went home, I either go to St. Patrick's Cathedral, because I made a novena for St. Anthony to get me out of Bellevue, and then I'd go to Paramount Pictures, which is still a part of my life. That's who released The Godfather. Unbeknownst to me, I'm going to Paramount. It was open 24 hours a day. I'm watching Some Like It Hot. I watched the monster 10 times. In fact, the lady, which is a funny story, the ladies at the, you know, the candy counter, I'd get a big thing of popcorn. They'd give it to me for nothing because, you know, I was, they felt sorry for me. And every night they kept giving me more and more napkins. They knew I was masturbating in the balcony over Marilyn Monroe. And now she's laying in my shampoo basin. I can't believe it. And I didn't even know how long I was looking at her. She said, "Is somebody in here?" Because she's facing the ceiling, you know. So yeah. I went over there, and they taught me how to, you know, test the water and touch their wrist and let her approve it. Then I read the card. She likes a strong massage. So I stopped massaging. She's moaning like we're having sex. So I get an erection. I must have been poking her in the ear with it. And then she started requesting me, and that was it. Now, one thing led to the next, and I wound up in the Waldorf Astoria with her for 3 days.
Interesting. Now, did she kind of let a little bit of a crazy going on there?
She had, I felt sorry for her, and I hit it off over conversation first, because she met me into when I knocked on the door, because Costello took the weekend off and he was hiding her out there for a year. She was in New York for a year that time, going to school in Strasbourg. She really wanted to become an actress, not a sex symbol. So with that said, when I got up there, we started talking, and I told her my history about, you know, me being in Bellevue at 12 and polio. And unbeknownst to me, she was put in an orphanage at 12. And she used to look out the window and see the tower of the Warner Brothers. And she used to fantasize of someday becoming an actress. And me, I just, once I got the window bed in Bellevue after 2 years, I was looking at the skyscrapers of the Empire State Building. And because I never saw buildings that tall from Mulberry Street, everything's only 5 or 6 stories. So that's how we hit it off. And then that was a Saturday afternoon. I left on Monday morning. And I'll have to tell you, it changed my life from that day on and stayed friends with her right up until Cal Diva. You know, I was up there when they set that whole thing up. And she went crazy. 3 days later, they killed her. And I said it in 95 that Bobby Kennedy arranged it. Everybody, even my publishers were afraid to, you know, publicize it. But now if you watch the Netflix thing about Marilyn, they have him in her house for 4 hours before they took her out. So
yeah, he was in town.
I know. But prior to that, he said he wasn't. But how's an attorney general go to California and nobody knows he's there? They got pulled over with Peter Lawford on Sunset Boulevard. I've done my homework on this one.
Yeah, it's funny. I went by her house. I had an apartment in Brentwood for a little while, so it wasn't far from Sunset and Barrington. I had a hot place. Very interesting stories there. I mean,
you weren't even you weren't far from OJ's house either there.
Yeah, that's right around the corner, right?
I know.
Interesting. At the time when that went down, what did you think?
I didn't. I mean, I went to see Costello when I came back from Cal Neva, and I told him what went on. That's the only reason I was there, was his eyes and ears. And I told him, he said, well, and his whole demeanor changed, and he reached next to him. This was on a Tuesday, and he handed me a manila envelope. He said, you got to leave the country for a while. I said, whatever you say. And he said, there's $15,000 in there. And I just signed you on the Independence, a ship. I said, how'd you do that? He said, well, I signed you on as a hairdresser. Captain Pennington's a friend of mine. This is how smart this guy was. He said, I signed you on as a merchant marine so they won't know where you are. Because I didn't have to use my passport or nothing. And I never realized that. You know, if you're a merchant marine, it's like being in the armed services. When you're commissioned to a ship, you're commissioned to the ship. So I got on the boat. And he said, when you get to Barcelona, somebody will pick you up. We were going under the Verrazano Bridge that morning, and they announced the president was shot. And then everything came together with me in my head, saying, uh-oh. And the blood drained from my head, because I got to know Senator John F. Kennedy over the 6 months, every weekend at the Sands Hotel, while they were moving him around to get nominated. Then once he got nominated, I never saw him again until he got elected. When I saw him that night there, when Costello wasn't going to go, out of courtesy, they sent him an invitation. He said, you want to go? I said, yeah, I'll go. You know, I'd go anywhere at that time. Mm-hmm. And that was the last time I saw Sinatra and him together. And that was the last time Sinatra saw him. Because when he made his brother attorney general, they had to end that friendship, which almost killed Sinatra. Sinatra was so pissed at that.
Those guys stood up for them and, you know, helped them out a lot, right?
Without them, they would never got in. That's all I was doing. I was meeting every union head in the world. You name them, Teamsters, culinary union guys with envelopes. And they padded those ballot boxes and got them elected. They never had a Catholic president that early on. And then, Bobby screwed him. Well, Joe made the deal with the mob because they were all in prohibition together. Joe Kennedy made $30 million in the 30s with Costello. That's why Costello and him were so loyal to each other. But Bobby didn't want to have it. Bobby was Ethel's little pet, and he was going to show his father and his brother that he had more power, which, you know, we see that with siblings all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, all that stemmed from their father, right? Because he.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Joe had connected all the while. I remember going to Palm Beach and delivering a message in an envelope. And then he had a stroke right after that because Costello said, we're going to start killing your kids. I found that out later. But I thought it was going to be Bobby long before John.
And when did that calm down?
Well, calm down after they killed Bobby. Then it was over.
It was done.
I was, it's so funny that you should bring that up because I was with Carlos Mathalos that Sunday. He used to have these big barbecues down in New Orleans. I liked him a lot. And I was down there after the presidency and all of that, and everybody was really pissed. It was about a year and a half already went by, and they didn't invade Cuba. They promised invading Cuba, and that was the deal they made with the mob. We'll give you back your casinos, because, you know, after they took out Batista, Fidel Castro took over, and that was it. They left millions down there. So that's why the mob went along with it. Mm-hmm. And Bobby stopped that and convinced his brother there's no missiles on Cuba. But that afternoon, they raided on a Sunday afternoon Marcellus's house. First of all, the feds don't even work on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And Bobby was there. And Bobby threatened, Marcellus threatened him. He said, "You're dead." And he had all the press there. And he said, "What'd you say? You're a dead man." He said, "You're threatening an attorney general?" And he said, "I'm not threatening you. I'm promising you, you are dead."
Wow.
And, you know, a couple of weeks later, he was dead, man.
Interesting. What is that position like today? They're all politicians.
Oh, I don't know that. I mean, look where we are. Jesus. I think we were better off when the mob was running it.
That's what I said. I go to a country club in New Jersey, and I believe, like, all the mob are cops now.
Hello. That's crazy. It's amazing.
You know what I'm saying?
I know. I mean, I knew... Well, because I'm very close with the Chicago mob. They had Truman. They had presidents long before that, you know, and after it. Ronald Reagan, Nixon, they were all their guys. Ronald Reagan would have never been president. If it wasn't for Lou Wasserman. Forget about it.
Lou Wasserman, that's a name.
Hello.
He had a little position in Hollywood.
Yeah, I would think so.
Interesting.
Yeah. I got a lot more books coming out. You're going to enjoy it. In fact, my new book is coming out now. My new book is out already.
The Hollywood Godfather?
No, The Sixth Family.
The Sixth Family.
If you go online now, your audience goes to The Sixth Family. It's out now, and it's flying off the shelves already.
What's the elevator pitch about The Sixth Family?
The Sixth Family is a guy who's a disgruntled guy. You would probably think he was John Gotti. And he thought he was going to take out the other five families in New York and create the Sixth Family. He'd be the head of it. And it's laced with Marilyn Monroe, a daughter that we had together, nobody knew about. So she's exposed in this. But it's a page turner, I'll tell you that.
So you have a kid with Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah. A girl. She's 63.
And where is she at today?
Well, she was living here for a while. Now she's back upstate. She wants no identity to her. We found out later on, I casually threw Costello, believe it or not, because he always loved Marilyn. He was taking care of her for a long time. I think you like this book.
That's a pretty, when they gonna make the movie? That sounds like a movie.
I have the interest now of a guy that, you know, I mean, he came to my show just recently. I did a show at Herb Alpert's restaurant, Vibrato, on tour The Godfather, Hollywood Godfather. I turned that into a musical, and I've been doing did three countries and 13 cities already. And Mel Gibson, believe it or not, I didn't know him. I know of him, obviously. We all did. He and Gene Simmons came to my show, and they were in awe with the show. Really? And I got to meet him. I sent him the book, and he's interested in that book and any other book I have. And, you know, he could do anything he wants at this point. He's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And he's looking to get back into the business. I'm hopefully it's going to be these books. He wants to create a new Bond series with Johnny Russo.
Wow. I mean, it's a very colorful story. I mean, I think we need to get back to those types of stories. You know, I think we've pushed some of this creative a little. I guess we pushed this creative to me that's a little disconnected. And I think if we can tell these stories that are more about the roots of, you know, America and people in America, I think we got to get back to those stories.
And that's funny you should say that. That's almost verbatim of what he's saying. You know, it's great, all this sci-fi stuff and special effects and people flying through the air. But let's get, like, you know, back to the roots, what's really going on.
Yeah. I mean, it's more relatable.
Oh, yeah, right? That's definite.
And you don't hear those stories. I mean, is there a generation that don't know the history of the mob?
Well, that's interesting. We should say that also. I think that's why my career keeps going. I fill showrooms, and four different generations, young people, they come up to me on the street. Hello, Carlo. It's like you can't get, I love it. And why wouldn't I? You know, it's self-rewarding.
Well, it's kind of like the Marty Bregman. I raised some money for Marty Bregman. who produced Scarface, and that didn't hit till 10 years later when the rappers picked it up. Maybe there's that run again in that space.
Well, I mean, it's funny you should say rappers. Joel Ortiz, I don't know if you know who he is, probably one of the most, he's got 270 million followers. Arsenic, the producer, another guy is a monster. They rapped my book. My book is out there, but they can't find an audience for it. I'm thinking we make that the soundtrack of the first movie.
Yeah. What's your ultimate, like if you have an ultimate showrunner director for the book, who would it be?
You know, that's a good question because of the fact that, the showrunner, we didn't get to that yet. I'd like to know who has the foresight, the old school, that could put some of that old color into if Coppola was coherent, he'd be the guy. Because look what he did with The Godfather. I mean, this guy, and, I was side by side to him. He was not a few years older than me. I mean, his choices were unbelievable. We're here talking about it yet. And it has to be that subtle approach.
Is there a 20-year-old you in real life out there?
I there's a couple of guys I know that I think could do it. And actors, too. You know who I really thought would be the guy? But he got caught up in this Me Too thing as a young director was Brett Ratner. Because his grandfather was a major guy. And he was raised by Al Malnick. And he was around that whole life. You have to smell the garlic, even though he's Jewish. And he was on both sides of it.
Yeah. Actually, I've been to Brett's house in Beverly Hills years ago.
So how were you involved? You keep throwing these names out. How were you involved with all of this? Marty Bregman, Brett Ratner.
I mean, my best friend was Eric Nice. He was on the very first Real World, hosted The Grind on MTV.
Right.
My mentor was Kim Parks. He was a business affairs guy at Warner Brothers and business affairs at MTV. But Kim Parks is when I asked you if you knew Clem Caserta, Ken being my mentor, Ken introduced me to Clem. Clem was, De Niro's best friend.
Well, he thinks
Staten Island.
He thinks he is. Clem thinks everybody's his best friend. You know Clem.
You know Clem?
Of course I know Clem. I know his sister. Hello. He tried to get free tickets out of me the other night. I can't believe using his sister, who lives in Red Bank, who was friends with my mother, no less.
Really?
Clem don't change. He's a hustler.
Let me ask you another. I'll tell you another friend of mine, because I did a boxing match at the Ohika Castle. Gary Milius.
Who?
Gary Milius at Ohika. Ohika Castle.
Don't know.
In Long Island, in Huntington.
Don't know him. I know of the guy, but I don't know him.
Yeah, I met a lot of guys through him as well.
As you know, it's so hard to weed them out. Who's real, who's not. They played a good game.
Well, I'll tell you a quick story with Gary that got his attention. Because I was a redneck in New York. Hillbilly, had the Southern accent. And Frank McKay invited me to I guess it was Sunday. They had the Sunday lunch or Monday lunch. I can't remember what day it was. But I was doing some stuff with Lou Duva, right? Because I was an advisor to Vicious Vivian Harris. So we threw a boxing match, and I brought Lou Duva to one of those lunchings with the judges and stuff. And then when Lou showed up, they gave me credibility. They're like, hey, you brought Lou Duva here, that kind of got me in that world because I was touched in the boxing world for a minute, but that's not a business you want to be in.
Not anymore. I used to go to Madison Square Garden anytime I wanted with Costello. That's when you're really in the business.
Interesting. Did you know Lou?
No, I know of him. With those kind of guys, after the, you mentioned Jimmy DeWeasel and all these kind of guys, there's too many rats out there. And I got a past that I preserve, and they all want to come to my house. I don't let anybody around me, especially now. And you never know who's wearing a wire and anything today. Everybody's a rat.
Yeah, you can't trust anybody. There's not any real people out there.
I lost one of the realest. I lost a guy 2 weeks ago that I could talk about him now because he's passed. This was a real guy. I don't know if you ever heard of Tony Federici. If you went on Wikipedia now and looked up Tony Federici, it said underboss to the Genovese family and entrepreneur. He owned Parkside Restaurant and the whole surrounding six blocks.
Wow.
And he just passed 2 weeks ago. But there's some of them out there yet that, you know, they're under the radar. They don't want to be around anybody.
Well, I mean, it's like we live in Big Brother now, so you really can't do anything.
No, I wouldn't jaywalk. I mean, what I did 20, 30 years ago, I'd be doing life today.
Yeah.
If that, maybe electric chair. Who knows? It's craziness.
Yeah, that is nuts. I mean, it's people are just, I don't know, that people put no value. Well, people put no value in themselves. In return, they're not going to respect anything. They have no respect for anything because they have no value in themselves.
That's amazing that you said that, because we had a conversation just recently. I was in Sicily. I went over with Jacob, the jeweler, and Jacob is basically indirectly into some licensing that I have. I own Corleone Fine Family Foods and all that. And he licensed the Godfather watch, which I thought he was insane. And he's selling these watches at $500,000, $700,000. He flies me over in a private jet. We have a party over there you will not believe. Well, Apollonia got blown up in the courtyard that morning when Michael said, no, don't start the car. Well, we had a party there. The guy sold 10 watches at the party. I thought I was nuts. This guy is a genius.
Wow.
But only to show you don't know who's what and where. But I mean, it's crazy. The wealth, it's unbelievable. And I'm just seeing now, because we just had the 50th anniversary to Godfather. And if you went online now, you'll see my products all over the place. We're in 73 countries. We're doing the same thing for The Godfather 2. We're doing the same thing for Godfather 3, even though it wasn't great. Then I got a 7-year run with this thing because people are so enamored with that life and that product. It's crazy.
When you did that movie, did you know, did y'all have a feeling that this thing was going to turn into what it was going to turn into? Or just,
we didn't even think it was going to be released. Paramount kept threatening Coppola to fire him. They hated Pacino. The first dailies were at my wedding. The first time anybody saw Pacino on screen other than Panic in Needle Park was in an army uniform, and they were ready to pull the plug. Charlie Bluedorn just bought Paramount at that time, Gulf and Western. And he said, are you kidding me? This ain't a mafia movie. But, you know, Coppola kept going. Look what we have. It's a masterpiece, which I'm glad I'm a part of it. I mean, I hear it, not that me saying it's a masterpiece, but it's recognized as a masterpiece.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you will never die. It'll be in history for here and for eternity. I mean, you know, it's a
nice thing to have. I mean, my other relatives are memorialized in a different way. I like the fact that from a mob movie.
Well, I'm not going to hold you up too much longer. I've took up about an hour of your time, but it's been a great conversation.
You're not holding me up. I tell you right now, I don't know you, but you're an interesting guy. I mean, just the names you, and I know you're not just dropping names, you're in conversation. So we got to get together and talk. But I'd like you to read the book. In fact, I'll send you one if you want.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have Mimi send you an address. Send me the book. Absolutely.
I want you to read it. I think there's a franchise here, and you seem like you're a businessman. This is
absolutely.
And there's a definitely need for it. Let's put it that way.
Well, maybe Cassavetes. I mean, hell.
Well, he's dead.
No, well, his son, Nick.
Is Nick doing anything now?
I don't know. He just did. What's that? God is a bullet, I think. I haven't heard anything about it being released, but I know Jamie Foxx was in that movie.
You know, Jamie Foxx is a guy I love. You know, I took Jamie Foxx out of TV and put him in Any Given Sunday. That's one of my big movies. And it's funny that we should say that. Yeah, I mean, we have 38 movie stars in that movie. That was Pacino and Oliver Stone. We got together at Dan Tanner's. They knew I had something to do with football. My brother-in-law, Pat Bowlen, owned the Denver Broncos, just won Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And that's how we put that movie together.
Wow. Yeah, some great actors in that movie.
Oh, my God, yeah. And with so much. We got Charlton Heston out of retirement. He played Aglipu from the NFL. And funny story, Anne Margaret, who I love, I casted her for Cameron Diaz's mother. So I called the husband, and he says, Johnny, come on, you know she's an alcoholic. I said, did you read the script? He said, no, you can't read the script. I said, she's playing an alcoholic. She don't even have to sober up. I want her just the way she is. And she was amazing. Next time you watch it, you'll hear her slurring her words and everything. She wasn't acting. We just kept giving her what she wanted to drink.
Nice. You know, hell, you never know till you try, right?
Hello. All right. Well, thank you so much for your attention. And anytime, call me, man. I love it.
Yeah, when
you're an intelligent guy. You ask the right questions. You know, I get on this stuff, and sometimes they're talking about another guy. Says, that's not me. You're talking about another actor. Oh, I got these in my notes. Well, do your homework and call me the next time.
Yeah, I try to dig into the personality, you know, kind of interview them from the ground up instead of from like the top down, you know, like kind of find out what they're really about.
But I think when you review what you do, and I'm sure you analyze everything you do, that's probably why you have the audience you do, because people are hearing stuff they're not going to hear.
Absolutely. Well, if you need a good book about history, The Sixth Family, name of the book.
That's the name. That's it, man. The Sixth
Family. The Sixth Family. Sixth Family, about the sixth mafia family, potential mafia family.
And it's on Amazon right now. You know what thrills me most about that? I go on Amazon now and I have two books that are being bestsellers.
Nice.
And I'm an illiterate. That's what I want. I want these kids to know. I never went to school.
Yeah.
And that's why the last sentence in my first book was, yes, you can. Because if I can do it, anybody can do it. I want to motivate even my grandsons. They're all on these palms. They're brain dead, these kids. They're all on these little things.
We need to get them off technology.
Oh, man. They got no imagination. They can't even correspond.
Mm-hmm. I have a theory about that. Is when you put all your sensibilities, right, and you don't experience, it's a swipe left, swipe right. Right. Decision. You put no emotions in your decisions. So if we have all these senses, right, and we don't utilize them, and we step away from that, and we get in the real world, one, we overreact because we haven't used our senses growing up properly, right? Plus, you don't respond to anything because you don't know how to respond.
Well, I think, you know, you just hit on what's going on with mental health in this world today. They don't know how to deal with it. They never have.
Absolutely. Well, we're trying to balance, and I could get on a soapbox about this all day long, but we're trying to equal percentages. You can't equal percentages, or you can't make percentages equal.
And and they're trying to control us biologically.
Yeah.
That's why I don't
take those. We're fighting against the universe.
Hello. That's why I don't take those vaccines.
Yeah. I mean, we're literally fighting against the universe, and we think we're trying to help it by making everybody equal, but we weren't meant to be that way. Because you could look at the Vivarium painting that Da Vinci did.
Right.
That's about balance, yin and yang balance.
Yep.
Right. The numbers of that are tied to the pyramid, but that's kind of the code of the universe, and we're operating against that.
Not you or I.
Yeah, right.
I'm telling you that, man. I'm including you, and I've got 80 years into it. Yeah. You're on the right track, man, obviously.
Well, thank you, sir. And
thank you.
I appreciate you coming on the show. And
anytime, please. Mimi, call me. She's delightful. Everybody that I met through you all. Because, you know, I don't even know how to turn this thing on. Thank God I got texts.
Thanks for coming on the show. This is it. This is the Hollywood. What am I calling you? I'm calling you the Hollywood
Godfather, I guess. I don't know.
The Hollywood Godfather?
I can't get indicted for that.
Thanks for coming on the show. This is the Hollywood Godfather, Gianni Russo from New York City. And it's been a great conversation. And I'm John Edmonds Cosma, the CEO of Bang Productions. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.